Interview with Mattie Lee Herning on November 10th, 2000. Other participants are Colleen Herning-Wicken and Nancy Kuhn. This is Booth George.
Not much town there, so I wrote three letters, three applications. One to University of Alaska, and I didn't know where that was. I had to get the book out. It was in College, Alaska. And then I wrote another letter to Hawaii. I was going to get away.
You ended up in Hawaii.
And then I wrote the U.S. government for a military job. Well, the first one that came through was the military, and they wanted me to meet them at a certain pier in San Francisco on a certain day. Well, that was just before Okinawa and all of that war. And Mother and Dad just absolutely threw a fit.
So this would have been during World War II,
yeah,
don't you think? Okay.
All right. And I gave that up. I wrote, sent a thing and told them I wasn't going to be able to make that. And then I got a letter from a Dean Duckering. And he wanted to know if I still wanted to teach, would teach in Fairbanks, and could I come the second semester. So I wrote that back and accepted that. And he sent me this letter telling me what I was going to make and the whole bit. And then he died. Before I ever got up here. I never met him. And then, of course, I had to come in the leave in January down there in Amarillo. And we went to town and bought the heaviest duty clothes you could buy in Texas. And they weren't half big enough and wide enough and warm enough. And then after I got home, from here, after teaching a half a year, from January to May, I got a letter from Hawaii, and they'd offered me that job.
Oh,
so
man.
Those three letters, I got three job offers.
How did you decide on Alaska?
Well, I was already up here then, and I'd already met Carl. And he kind of took you off your sweet feet, you know, and was really a nice guy to me.
How did he sweep you off your feet?
Well, he went to the same church, and somehow my dad wrote a letter to the preacher up here, and he knew I was coming, and they didn't have anybody playing the piano. So I went right, the preacher met me at the airport. And so I met Carl on the very first Sunday. Is that your dog again?
Yes. Yeah. She
well, that's the same one that met us at the door. I thought that was your dog.
Oh, yeah. Colleen.
Oh, it's Al George's son.
You stay.
So that's how I met Carl was at that church. Of course, they said, oh, we've got a nice guy here we want you to meet. And they already had me all spotted, and I thought, oh, goodness.
Well, what was your first impression of Carl?
Oh, that he was a hillbilly number one. He had on these bunny boots. Of course, January, you know,
yeah,
it was
right.
Cold. And he drove this big old maroon-colored van with no windows. But he was using it as a bus, picking up the funk kids, taking them to school. That's all he took. That's all he picked up. And he didn't impress me very much. But I must have impressed him anyway, so he stayed with it. And then when I finally got to see the ground in the way back in after all of January, February, March, and April, and May, you could start to see what the ground looked like. But that's a miserable time to come up here, January 51. Of course, I had to go back to school down there and resign from this little Portales, New Mexico, is where it was that year. And I'd only been there a half a year.
Oh, did you sign a contract? And
no, they didn't care whether I was there or not. It wasn't any big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Just a plain old teacher in the high school. And I enjoyed the Portales, but then I had taught 3 years before that in this little country school.
Mm-hmm.
You were teaching general subjects then?
No, I was in the high school. I'm in commercial stuff.
Commercial.
Bookkeeping, shorthand, and typing. And we had to do the war stuff, you know. They had the teachers do all of these extra jobs. And they'd come around and they wanted these books. What were they now? Some kind of books that you could buy tires and buy sugar and...
Ration books?
Ration,
yeah. Oh, yes.
So we had to do that, and these families would come in there with 10 kids. And they'd bring all 10 of them, and we had it at the school, so we had to go back to school on a Saturday and Sunday and do those things. And then this woman would say she had 10 kids. Well, they had them all listed, or they'd stand there and you could count them. And then they'd get 10 ration books. Mm-hmm. That was a lot. Mm-hmm. And they had all kinds of sugar and everything else
that was in New Mexico.
Through the whole country.
Everybody.
Tell us about the first day you went to the university. I remember you describing it once, and it was, you talked about the leaky pipes and the room you went to, and what was your first impression when you went there?
Well, Minnie Wells came over and introduced herself, and she was smoking a cigarette on a big old cigarette holder, and she had on pants, and I was from the schools where the women didn't wear them. They had to wear dresses, and nobody smoked. And here she was smoking up a storm. She came in they had a room for me at Hess Hall, and they had opened up the vent, and they closed it all up, except nobody remembered to close the vent way up in the top. And from the vent down clear to the floor was a stream of ice. And then they turned the heat off, but it was still warm enough that it was supposed to have been a warm room. And it was on the first floor, and the women were all on the second and third floors of Hess Hall. And the men, the men teachers were down in the basement. So when I got off the plane, I had to find out. They brought me clear into Fairbanks. And this yellow school bus, had a heater in the back end with a stovepipe sticking out the back. And it was somewhat warm in there. And there were two of us that wanted to go to Fairbanks. Everybody, all the rest of the whole crew, they were all soldiers coming back from Christmas. And I didn't realize that I'd never been on a plane before. I didn't realize if you washed your hands, you didn't have any water. They had the water all turned off on the plane. So here I was with soap all over my hands. And I couldn't get it off, so I was glad to get off that plane. Then when I got to Fairbanks, Guyman's son was driving the bus, and they unloaded us at Ladd Field, which was still 2 or 3 miles yet from Fairbanks. And when we got off the plane, these soldiers were standing out there holding these fluorescent lights. We didn't have any lights on in the field, so the plane, I wondered how it landed. Everything was off. They had a real snowstorm.
Now, did you land at Ladd?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
For these kids.
Yeah.
These soldiers, that's the whole outfit was all soldiers.
So were the soldiers lining the landing strip, holding for us at light, so that the plane knew where to land?
Yeah. And it was funny, I never had ridden a plane, so I got into Seattle in the middle of the night, and we went down through this place where they were selling tickets. And the farther you got, the cheaper the plane, the tickets were in Seattle. And so Dad and Mother drove me to Seattle. And we started down there to get a ticket. We didn't even have a ticket to get up here. And at that point, nobody said anything about buying tickets in advance. Nobody did. Anyway, when it got to the end table, it was Pan American. And it was about a $75 ticket from Seattle to Fairbanks. And then we got the ticket, and I got on the plane and with my boots and everything on. And I thought, gee, that's going to be hot. But when I got on the plane, it was not hot. It was a cold plane, cold ride. And all the soldiers were excited about coming back to Fairbanks. And most of them had been up here the year up and just gone home for Christmas. And so when we got to when they let us off the plane out there at Fort Wainwright, here these soldiers are all standing around in these funny looking clothes with their faces nothing much showing but eyes and holding up these big fluorescent lamps. They had 2 or 3 bulbs in them and they were holding them. And that's what the plane landed with, you know. They had to have something.
Incredible.
And for some reason, the lights weren't on. They didn't have any field lights on. And they had just a little 10 by 12 the house sitting there that they used as a ticket agent. And they said, well, if you're going to the university, you first got to go to Fairbanks. And I didn't start out with that much cash in the first place, you know. I thought, well, maybe I had a bank account.
What time of day was this?
It was in the middle of the, well, I guess it would have been the middle of the night, no matter what time it was, but it was all black.
Uh-huh.
And this kid that in the bus was just a young, he must have been a high school kid. And it was Grimmon's son. And he got everybody on that was going to go to Fairbanks, and he wanted $4, I think. And I only had about two $5 bills by the time I'd paid this and that and the other to get that far. And so he said, well, he'd take me to town in that school bus. There were only about four of us that went to town off the bus. The rest of them got on other buses and went to Ileson and all these strange names. And I didn't know what Ileson was, but they all looked out of the plane and saw the lights on Ileson. They had a lot more lights than Fairbanks had. And then when we got to Fairbanks, I never saw such a road in my life. It was jump, 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 hitting the tops of the... He was going, you know, just normal speed, or real slow, I think, with his school bus. And it was a terrible road. And he said, oh, well, they've had a fire. The co-op drug just burned down. And these hoses were all over the street and frozen solid. It was about 30 below. Rough, and that was Cushman, and wherever, First Street, Second Street, I think. So I went up to the guy and the hotel manager or whatever he was. His name was Nigel. I found out because I talked to kids after that. And since then, his daughter is a teacher, became a teacher. But at that time, well, I guess she was in the high school as a student. And he said, well, we don't have any rooms here. All the miners are in town, and they're not going to move until mining season opens up again, and that's in the middle of June.
And which hotel was this at?
Norvale.
Oh.
And it had not burned yet, but the co-op drug had burned, and it was over a block, another block.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the street was so rough. All those hoses strung all out.
And frozen,
and he was taking this bus over the whole thing just like that. Really a rough ride. And then the guy in the hotel said, well, they didn't have a room. There was no room in the whole town. And if I was going to work at the university, here's the phone, the phone's right around there, call out there. Well, here it is. I think about that time it was 2 a.m.
Oh, my God.
So I called the number. He hunted up the number. I think they only had two phones out there. And I got Dr. Who was the president?
Bunnell?
No, but he was still around. He was even out there.
Who was after Bunnell, Al?
Can't think of his name. It was a nice...
Patty? Was he there by then? Yeah, 50, 51, he could have been. Dr. Patty?
Nope. What's the name of that?
Well, we'll think of it.
Okay. And, so he said, well, come on out here. I'll call Miss Fish. And I thought, what a strange name this place is, Fish. I never did know anybody by the name of just Fish. So he said, I'll call Miss Fish, and I'll have her to meet you at the door. You take a cab out here and go to Hess Hall. That's where everybody lives. And that's where we've got a room for you. And the first thing he said, are you still in Texas? So he knew I was coming.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a guy here, Washburn, flying around the mountain,
mm-hmm.
and the next day he took Moore. Was that his name?
Dr. Moore.
Dr. Moore.
Harris Moore, sure.
Out to the mountain, and I didn't see Moore either. He didn't show up anymore, so until later. And then I found out that my supervisor of my section, head of that department,
mm-hmm.
was in the hospital in Seattle with an operation, so I wouldn't see him either. So Minnie Wells found out I didn't have anybody to tell me anything, that I was here. So she comes over there and tells me who she is and introduces me to everybody on the first floor. But in the meantime, I went to this hotel, called, and he said, take a cab and come out to the university. Well, I didn't know where there was a cab either. And this guy said, didn't say, there's a kid here that's got a car, and he can drive you out to the university. And he went out to this little old Chevrolet, and just like one I'd left at home. I think it had four doors. But he put me in the front seat because it couldn't open the second seat. But he didn't put the suitcase in there, and I had two suitcases, and I'd already sent a trunk of stuff up here. So he said, he said I could take you out to the university. I think I know where it is. I haven't been out there.
Oh, no.
But I can get you there. So I got in the front seat with him, and he piled us two suitcases in the back. And there was not a light anywhere. And then finally we drove around and saw one 60-watt bulb up on top of us. It looked like a water tower, but it was all cased in. And it was on top of the old jail out there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he said, if there's a hall named Hess, I don't know where that is, so I'll just have to drive around and find it. So we drove two or three blocks around, and he said, there's Hess Hall. So we got out on the side. There's a front door, but he went to the side. And she saw us or heard us around there and came around and helped me get down. She said, we'll have to go downstairs from this door because it didn't connect. So we went downstairs. This taxi driver helped me get my junk out of the car. And we went downstairs because the other one didn't come up. There was no upstairs to it. The same floor just went down. And we were walking around banging on those suitcases on all the doors, and every one of the doors had a man's name on it. He said, I thought you were going to live in the girls' dorm. And I said, well, that's what I thought. And then I saw all these signs that say AC, and the next one would say DC, and the next one would say AC and DC all over the place, which meant nothing to me. And we went downstairs, and then she came down, heard us rummaging down there, and said, well, I'll take you back upstairs. Your room will be up on the main floor, first floor. They had two or three other teachers up there, and then the girls were on the second. There must have been another floor up there. It was a concrete building, kind of drab looking, not real fancy paint. Everything had just been painted over. So anyway, with all these men's names, I wasn't sure where I was going to go. We got up there. She said, now, the girls, it was during the semesters, and all the girls had brought their sheets down there and washed them in these old Maytag sweet washers. There were about six of them, that turned around.
Mm-hmm.
Just an old antique.
Ringer washer.
And she said, they've got them hanging on these lines, and they're about every 6 inches. There were lines all across the basement. And she said, we got to crawl under them. So we bent down and crawled under those old wet sheets.
2 o'clock in the morning.
At two, whenever it was, yeah. And so she said that she knew right where I was going and took me to the room, and there was my trunk. And I saw that stream of ice clear to the bottom. I got out. I opened up the suitcase, the trunk, and there was my heated. Oh, it was not a fuzzy blanket, but it was a sheet that had wires in it that was supposed to get it warm. And it went wham, bang, and all the lights flew out. And I plugged it in, and I thought, well, I wonder what AC and DC mean. And I found out right quick that I plugged it into a DC one, and it's supposed to be an AC. So that was the end of the blanket.
Ooh,
sheet. But it got hot in there, really hot, and you wouldn't dare open a window. You couldn't close it back because there was that stream of ice clear to the bottom. And they had a heater, they had a radiator in there, and it was a nice warm room. Then the next morning, over comes Minnie Wells. What a name that was, Minnie Wells, with that cigarette holder smoking up that thing. And pants on and a man's shirt. So she said, well, get your clothes on, or we'll take you over to where you're going to teach. Tomorrow you have to be there. Tomorrow would be Monday. And she went into this old building. We walked across, and snow was piled up 5 feet everywhere, just a trail. So we got to this building. It was an old building, and she said, now you'll be having an axe to be in charge of, an axe. And if the thing catches a fire, why, you can bring, and here's a bucket of water sitting in the hall, two or three buckets down the way. And it didn't make sense to me. I couldn't imagine hefting up a pail of water and throwing it, and the floors were all these oil floors. Mm-hmm. They were dark brown. Well, it had been there a long time. And there was a certain bucket that I was supposed to be in. And she said, I think this is the room you're going to be in. And it's a huge room. It had 10 typewriters here. It had 10 desks for secretaries here. It had 10 other desks for bookkeeping. And all in the same room, and then you looked out and you saw other buildings around there. And she didn't know which stuff I was going to teach or what I was going to teach. But, and she knew that was the room. And she said, I guess these are the books. And I recognized all the books and everything else. It was the same old stuff I had. And it was just kind of a miserable thing. And then here came the preachers, and he took me to downtown.
How did he find you?
Well, I don't know.
Say your father had called him?
Dad had written a letter to the First Baptist Church up here.
So he went out and found you, the next day or something?
No, yeah, that very next day. Because he didn't meet me out there at the airport. Well, at 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever time it was, nobody met me.
So you must have gotten in on a Saturday night, and this was Sunday that he came up and got you and took you to church.
And then he said, it was so cold, 30 or 40, it was 60 below. That was a spell then. And he said, if you'll just spend the night here, I'll get you back out to the class in time for Monday. So I stayed all night with them, and they had about 10 kids. Mabel Carey, she had six? Six kids. Anyway, they were all there.
This is Mr. Carey? Yeah. What's the preacher that came and got you?
No, he came out there to see me the next day, Carey was the preacher. And she with all these little kids, 3 or 4 of them anyway. And I thought, man, I like that. And she had yellow sheets. I thought, they must be paying this preacher pretty good, because I hadn't seen these nice colored sheets. Yellow. And I never said anything about the fancy sheets, but she put me in a nice little room, and they had about 6 bedrooms because they had all these kids at the church. And it was a nice church, brand new. It hadn't been built long. Carl was still working on the church because he'd drive the kids in from here for nothing. He was just, who was the superintendent? Ryan. To come in. He said, I see you're getting here every day at the time of school. You're bringing kids. Why don't you just pick up the funk kids and we'll pay you some money.
So the funks were the first ones that he took?
Mm-hmm. Well, besides Ann and Dorothy.
They were already graduated. Ann had just graduated.
Okay.
Or maybe she was in school at that point. Mm-hmm. I think that was the year she graduated. So he wasn't... However, I think he was taking Ann to school. Anyway, he'd stop and pick up the funks, then he'd go on over and do this nervous house he was building on.
Oh, George Nervous. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then he'd quit in time to go get them at school and bring them back.
So was that Carl's mom living with him at the time?
She was already dead.
Oh, so you never met her?
I never met her. And I met Ann and Dorothy.
And they were living with Carl at the time.
Not Dorothy, she was already married. And so was Ann. Ann was already married at that point. And they were both fixing to have babies at the same time, sort of. Anyway, I met... Carl had just shot a buffalo. He and somebody.
That day that you went to church the first time?
No, they'd had it already. I think he was on his last steak.
Mm-hmm.
So he asked me if I'd ever eaten buffalo, and I said no. So he invited me out, but he didn't invite me for the next Sunday. He waited about 3 weeks. And I said, well, why didn't you wait so long? Later on, he said, well, I had to get that house cleaned up. And I had to get Dorothy and Ann over there to do it. And he had them both there. He wasn't going to just have me out there by myself.
No.
And I thought, well, that was pretty nice. Because I didn't know him, and he looked like he looked like these Eskimos with these bunny boots. A big old coat, you know. And anyway, he didn't make much of an impression on me. Where am I now in this story? Anyway, I got to see where I was going to teach and what I was going to teach. And the head of my department was in Seattle having an operation. Dr. Moore was a taking an airplane, and it was parked right out there by the window. And he was going to go get this Washburn. Is that his name?
Bradford.
Yeah, okay. And they were going to go do something on Mount McKinley. And so I didn't have anybody there. The superintendent, not superintendent, head of the department was in Seattle. And Dr. Moore was gone with Brad, whatever his name was, to fly to Mount McKinley. And there just wasn't anybody there that knew anything at all. So when school started the next day, I had 10 girls. That was a whole bunch. That was all that were at, all girls in that school.
All the girls that were at the university?
There were only 10. And they were all taking typing and bookkeeping. So I had them both, had them all in two classes. And well, I think one class met at about 10 in the morning for an hour. And then along about 2 in the afternoon, the other one met, and that was it. And I thought, there surely ought to be more than this. There's two classes every day. And it wasn't every day. It was Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. And when they all got back from this vacation, Christmas was still going on. But at that point, they only gave the kids 4 days because they got out early so they could go head down far. Mount McKinley and get those jobs before the kids all came up here from the States. And so they didn't. They only had 3 or 4 days for Christmas. So I got there in time to do all of that. And they were a nice bunch of kids. Every one of them were real nice girls. And since they were the only girls there were, they hadn't had too much Christmas. And they all lived right here in Fairbanks. And there was no bus system here, so they all, mothers and dads, had to come and get them every day. It was really kind of primitive place. And all these boys were there from the Army. They'd started back with their...
They were taking university classes?
Uh-huh. And there were only 200 altogether students, with 10 of them being girls.
Wow, what odds.
So these girls were all fair, they didn't live on campus?
No. Well, yeah. Some of them did. Yeah. They lived in the Hess Hall, but it wasn't. They all weren't there. Didn't live there. There was a PE teacher. Now, what was her name? Bonnie, Billy. Finally, she went crazy. She went into the public school system after retiring, I think. Anyway, she married one of the students there, and they kind of frowned about that. Because she lived downstairs where I did, too, in another room. What was her name? I know you'd know her. She taught out there a long time. I played at her wedding. She got married at the Episcopal Church. So I was getting around playing that piano, too, at the First Baptist. Anyway, I kept wondering what the ground looked like. Because I hadn't seen any of it, see. Didn't get to see it till. And then Carl brought me out to his homestead and fed me that buffalo, and Dorothy and Ann were both there. And he did have it cleaned up, didn't even have a front door.
A blanket.
Well, how long had he been out there then?
Just that very year. Well, he got the blanket on. It was a big old military blanket.
Right. So he and Harold must have both homesteaded about the same time?
Well, Harold wasn't here yet. He hadn't bought this over here. He hadn't moved in yet. But I did meet him. He was out there working on the road when summer came. I entered
on Sheena Hot Springs
on the Herning Road. He was chopping all of those trees down and trying to get a house built.
Oh, to come through here.
Over here.
Yeah, right.
And the mosquitoes were black, so thick on his face you couldn't see his face.
While he was working on
the road. Really a strange situation.
So Carl was the first one of the Hernings to settle.
Well, it was his mother.
No, Dad.
His mother kept saying, now you guys have got to get a homestead. And without her, he'd have never done it. She went in and signed up the papers for him.
Oh. And well, see, Dad, he filed on his homestead before Carl did, I think.
I don't
in
know,
47,
have.
Something like that.
It was 40-something. 46, I believe. That's when Carl came out here.
Did I hear the name Fish?
Miss Fish.
Miss Fish. She was a school nurse. Practically ran the place.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah, She'd been there quite a while.
She got me started and knew where I was supposed to be and what I was supposed to do a lot better than Minnie Wells did. And she never was over there in that big old building. It was such an old, old thing, and it was all greasy from all that floor sweep.
Was this a military building?
No, it was Old Main.
No, not that Old Main. Oh,
is
okay.
That the one the museum ended up in at first?
Yeah.
Well,
no, that was him.
That was the
library.
Over there.
Aisle. It was on the top floor.
Well, wait a minute. It was next door to aisle.
Boarded over so that you didn't realize
see that. Uh-huh. And it had one 60-watt light bulb. That was it for the whole campus. And the kids ate in a military building, kind of behind. Well, it was all those buildings out there. Then they tore that down too.
It has to be about where the
hole is before you get to that community center thing. Where,
The Wood Center?
Wood Center is.
I was thinking it was in the plaza out there. Yeah, that, as you say, the hole before you get
the hole in the ground.
That would be right in there.
Well, how long did you teach at the university?
3 years, 3.5.
You must have been there when the guy flew his plane into the side of the building.
I think so.
Well, that was where they put it, wasn't it?
Well, it was Eielson that he flew into.
Oh, okay.
I think. That was it, Bradford. You said his name.
Washburn.
Okay. He's the one that was taking. Moore was taking him to the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And it was already January, I guess. Yeah, it was January 20th, I think, is when I got here. And there was nobody here. What did I say? Hide me in that letter.
Moore or.
He's got a name.
Oh, Duckery.
Duckery.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one that hired me. Then before I got up here, he had died and they already buried him. So he wasn't here to tell me anything.
So it was up to you to just decide what to teach and...
And how many and who was coming, and they didn't give you a list of anybody.
Well,
the girls showed up, they knew where they were going and what they were taking.
Yeah.
So did you live in Hess Hall the 3 years that you taught up there?
I taught up there 2 years before I married Carl.
Mm.
And then I moved out here.
But then you taught another year?
Uh-huh.
Mm.
So how was that for you to move from Hess Hall out here to the home?
Oh, it was kind of neat. I liked it. It was terrible. He had to park up there where those igloos are. And a lot of days walk down because that was the rainiest summer they'd ever had. And then the roads were impassable.
What summer was that?
51. Rain.
Okay. Were you driving on what is now the Tina Hot Springs Road? Was it?
Steel Creek.
That's
all right. That big loop and all that great big hill, and half the time I had to back down it because I wasn't used to driving up here or anywhere else. And I'd back down. I had a wreck or two.
You mean in the winter you had to back down?
Uh-huh. Oh, every winter. I had to nearly every day there for a while because I couldn't get enough speed from our driveway.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a little thin road.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there was no bridge there. And I guess Tilly would get out and put her planks down to drive her tractor over that Steel Creek so she could carry her eggs to town to sell them.
Wow. Would she leave the planks so everybody else could cross?
Yeah, pretty much. But that tractor was an old John Deere.
Like a rubber tire?
And it was a
white
one, yeah. It was rubber tired. And it didn't fit my little car when we drove out. And at that point, see, I wasn't driving yet. I didn't have my car up here. That very summer, Cashin was in charge of summer school, and so he offered me a job for the summer. Well, I wanted to go home and see Mother and Dad, because I'd been up here 4 months by that time. And I thought maybe they'd come back with me and I could bring my little car back, which is what we did.
Wow, that must have been
so you
adventure.
Drove?
Mm-hmm. I drove all the way back. Clear from Amarillo. That's the north end of Texas.
What kind of a car was it?
It was a little Chevrolet. Just like what that kid in the cab drove me out to the college for with the first time.
So you drove the Alaska Highway one
right
first,
Mother and Dad came with me.
Yeah.
And then you couldn't find a room in town. There was nothing to eat, no place to live. So he said, well, I've got that upstairs, so they can come and sleep in that. So that's what they did.
Who's upstairs with this?
Carl.
Carl. Oh, okay.
It's just it's got windows in the ends. It was a nice big room, and they enjoyed it, and they thought, oh, man, what a hillbilly.
So what did they say to you about Carl?
Oh, they didn't like it because I was going to live up here. And Mother never did forgive me, never. But Dad did.
He could see the adventure in it, probably.
Oh, he thought this was the place to be. And all this land was selling for $40 an acre everywhere. And he told Carl to find him so many acres, and Carl got out and found all these nice places. Glove Road, the whole thing was for sale. I think they wanted $4,000 for the whole thing. And Carl had it all listed, and when Mother found that out, that ended the whole thing. Dad never bought another piece of any of it.
Okay, called cut off.
Yes. Well, you mentioned Tilly. So Tilly and
they
and
had
Henry
a chicken farm out here.
We're living out. Do you have any idea when they first came out?
No, I don't know a thing about them.
I remember hearing about the fact that they had to drive a tractor from, I thought, the top of the hill, the top of 4 miles.
Oh, I think they drove it clear into town.
Could be.
That rubber tire tractor.
Because they were gathering up quite a few eggs every day, and they were taking them in nearly every day. I don't know how she got them on in a tractor. Those things don't have any extra space to put
Maybe
eggs.
She had a wagon that she
bought. I don't know what else she had. I never did see her on the road, so she did it when I wasn't there. But we had to go around that way, you know, instead of just coming through. They didn't even have, what's this called, where we had to go through, instead of turning off where we turned off through that underpass.
Yeah.
At that point, you went clear all down
the
steeps.
Yeah.
And there was a big hill there. And half the time, I never got up it. I'd have to back down it. And I'm not a very good backer. Still, I'm not. And the car, you know, if you're in the wrong rut, you get off and may go over those edges there. And Carl kept saying he had a brother named Earl, but I never met Earl. But Earl was living out here in a concrete block house.
And he was homesteading also, right?
I don't know if he bought it or what. I don't know. We need the map, I guess. I think his name is on that.
You never met Earl while he was here?
Not at first. I only met Carl, Dorothy, and Ann. And their husbands.
And not Dad?
And not Don, but I met Harold and Beatrice. And right after he was out here working on this road, cutting these trees down, all
after
the heathens on his face, he moved out here into this house that he was going to build, and he was going to make it one big room, and that's what he did. And Carl said, well, why are you making it all these windows here? And he said, well, I'm going to make a shop out here, and I'm going to put the house on top. So it wasn't any shop there. It was just that first room. And with a big cook stove in there and an old oil barrel heater. It was pretty primitive. And Beatrice, then they moved out here. I guess in maybe 51 or 2.
That's what she was telling me.
So it was the year after you came that Beatrice moved out? Or was it that summer that
I don't
know.
It might have been that very summer, because he was working on the road in January, right?
January?
Well, he wasn't cutting trees at that point, but it wasn't very long till I met him. Now, it was in the summer he was out here cutting that road through. And he cut it clear through, and I thought, well, that's odd that he built that house way off the road. But that's what he did. And he was going to make a... They're going to have the basement for his shop and live up above it, but he never, ever got that done.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah.
Then, of course, out at that university, they had this and that and the other thing, a dance and then a bonfire and all that activity stuff going.
Mm-hmm.
And all these boys, oh yeah, they thought I was pretty neat. They all wanted to date, and I thought I'd better not start that.
So you decided on Carl. How did you decide on Carl?
It wasn't easy. I went through a lot of problems thinking about it.
What were the big issues for you when you think about it?
Well, he was such a hillbilly. He didn't even have a suit.
Mm-hmm.
Never did.
Mm-hmm.
But he finally got one or two.
Mm-hmm. What clinched it for you?
I don't know. I don't know.
So when were you married?
52.
Mm-hmm. What date?
February 22nd. We did pick that date. Is that a holiday?
Oh, yeah. What's your birthday?
Okay, we both thought we'd have that day off. And he had to go to school and take the kids, so did I. So we didn't have the day off. But we did get married at the church, and when we went there, we didn't plan anything fancy. And everybody got mad at us because we didn't have it fancy. We didn't spend a penny. And they expected a big fancy wedding with all this food and cakes and stuff, and we just didn't do it.
Did you have witnesses?
Yeah, mm-hmm. They were there cleaning up the church. It was a Saturday. And the preacher and his wife had on their old clothes cleaning and stuff. They had a nice church.
That was the Carries.
Uh-huh.
Mabel and what was her husband's name?
Orland.
Orland, yeah.
Hmm. Where was this church?
It's where it is now, and instead of facing the federal building or state building, it was facing that 7th Street, between 7th and 8th.
Yeah. Or maybe the First Baptist Church?
Uh-huh. Or maybe between 6th and 7th.
Mm-hmm.
The one that you go to?
Uh-huh.
That was where they were living?
Yeah, in the church.
Oh.
Up on the
They started that church?
I think they did. Yeah.
Oh.
It had been there a couple of years. Carl had helped build the church.
Oh.
Yeah. And that was the church Carl was going to, so I met him about the first Sunday. It was quite an experience, not anything like Hawaii would have been. And nothing like that island I was going to go to with the military. Midway. Is that where that big war was? Midway?
Mm-hmm. That was one of the big
battles. That's the one I was going to go to.
Out in the middle of the Pacific.
Uh-huh.
When did you guys get running water?
Whole years later. Carl was going to do it himself, you know. And
what, dig a well himself?
He borrowed this guy's equipment and set it right out there in front of the house. We just had that one big room with an upstairs, kind of a loft upstairs. And he had to get the bus and go get the kids. So this friend said, well, just go get it. Go ahead. When you get back, I'll have water for you. So Carl said, okay. And he said, remember, I got all those tools borrowed, and I've got to pay him, get them back to him by Monday or something so he could drill a well somewhere. And when Carl got back, they had the tools all hung in the bottom, and they could not get them out.
The well driller had all the tools in the bottom?
It was just a friend that was, now I think I could think of his name too. Because they were friends a long time.
Was it Andy Johnson used to drill everybody's well, right?
I don't know about that one. That's not the name.
So the drill and all that stuff was all in the bottom of the hole?
So he ended up having to pay that $4,000 or $5,000 back, you know, because it got them all stuck, couldn't get them out. And they were down about 100 feet already. Or maybe two. I think our well's two something.
So you still have the same well? You're using that though?
No. During the earthquake later on, it took the bottom off. Took the, just above the pump.
Oh.
It ripped off one piece of cable.
Mm-hmm.
Not cable. What do you call it? It's the first pipe.
Pipe? Casing?
Casing. Took one section of casing and just below the pump. We did get the pump out. But the pump was already there. When did we have that earthquake?
64?
Is that 64. Yeah. And so we still didn't have water in 64. In 64.
We had water up to that point, and then the earthquake sheared that off. And then you had to go get the welding.
Well, after we had to pay for the parts, it took us a while to get that payment back. Mm-hmm. Carl did get Swan or somebody out there to drill a well.
What about electricity? When did you get electricity?
Well, he had one light bulb already.
When you moved out there?
He had lights.
So did he have a generator?
No, Golden Valley.
Golden Valley was
Telly, Tilly, and whatever his name was, had gotten Golden Valley that far, out to their place.
Oh.
But Carl only had one light bulb and a little plug-in to put his radio in. He had a set of batteries big enough to fill up the whole thing. He was a modern. kept up with all the countries and stuff. But that was about one of the first things that went. We ordered a little old radio from Montgomery Ward.
What was the first thing that went? The batteries?
I think so. And he had one light bulb and a refrigerator.
Oh, wow. He was very uptown.
Yeah.
So what were you cooking on?
I don't think I ever cooked on that wood stove. He got a wood stove in there, too. I just never did get the hang of that. And I burned everything or I didn't have any
other. So did Carl do the cooking?
I don't know what we did there for a while. Must have starved.
Canned fruit, maybe.
Because I lived the last year I taught school, I was out here.
Mm-hmm. That would be.
I didn't do too much cooking.
53?
Something like that. Yeah. Oh, I remember Carl would go out in this nice fresh snow and bring it in. He had a string or a rope tied to the bucket, to a big old wash tub. Brand new wash tub. I guess he bought that brand new. And drug in water to the house, to the one room we had. Because the very next year he put another room on. Then we've added the room nearly every year.
For a kid, every time a new kid came along, huh?
So you were melting snow for water with your tub.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Melting it on the wood cook stove?
Uh-huh.
Or did you have a barrel stove, too?
Then we got electric stoves in there. So with all this electricity, he had to go back around. And at that point, right after the war, he couldn't even buy metal, anything.
No
wire.
Faucets, yeah.
No wire, no roofing. And he had a hard time keeping the heat. You know, he worked for Pan America.
Mm-hmm.
When he would. And they would furnish this food to their attendants as well as their passengers. And every time they'd get so sick they couldn't eat.
From food poisoning?
No, not food poisoning. It was just airline stuff. They'd get sick in the plane. Couldn't eat.
Air sickness.
Oh, I see.
So everybody all around, they were all a whole bunch of men out here. Homesteading, Kruger, Lynn Strand, there were two of them. And George, there was a George, kind of a screwball that lives out here yet. George.
You mean Bob Strait?
Bob Strait, and all of them would come over to Carl's place because Carl would bring all this food home.
All the airline food.
Pan Am said, if you've got any friends that need food, take them. So Carl, you know, he saw all these guys. They were always coming over there eating. I couldn't remember. At first I thought, well, which one is my husband? They were all
the time. They all looked so grubby. Huh?
Yeah. And ready to eat.
Oh, sure.
And he would bring all this fresh butter and fresh milk that people were paying arm and leg for in town. But they'd give it to anybody that wanted it. And so Carl would bring it out here, and all these guys would start coming around eating time.
They'd come in out of the woods?
Always bachelors.
Mm-hmm.
There were a bunch of them.
Nancy just drove in.
Oh, was Carl Lindstrand one of them?
Oh, yeah, he was one of the main ones. He ate.
Carl Lindstrand, Joe Kruger, Bob Strait.
Yeah.
Who else?
And Everett Lindstrand.
Then there was a blind guy, Everett, too. Mm-hmm.
And there was a
blind guy. King or Kelly or, let's see, there's Cole. C-O-L-E.
Henry Cole?
Henry Cole?
Was there a blind, one of them blind or part blind?
Well,
that's a road right up here.
Oh,
Johnny
Kalina. Johnny Kalina?
Okay, I guess that was
Kalina. He was the part blind.
Okay, then he was there. And there were a lot of them there, eating all of this Pan Am stuff.
I didn't realize that was the big draw.
Mm-hmm. And up in the airplane, one time I went up there and looked all around. Hi.
You know Nancy, I think.
How are you?
Fine, thanks.
And you could look out, and here was this, our house right here, and all these little trails coming off from it.
Like wheels, spoked up a wheel?
Well, not really. It was more like footpaths.
Who was using those footpaths?
All these bachelors that I was talking about. There were a dozen of them around here.
What do you know about Joe Kruger? He's the one I remember the most.
Oh, he was over there all the time.
Where was
and the funny
from?
Thing was, if I wasn't there cooking, he'd just take whatever we had anyway.
He'd just walk in and
mm-hmm.
open the cupboards and take whatever?
Two or three of them did that. We'd buy bread, because I wasn't making bread yet then. I got to the point where I was making about 20 loaves a week.
For these guys?
Yeah, there was, because my family was a little slower growing than all these guys, and they were there nearly every day.
Wow.
But I guess that came with Carl.
Yeah, that was part of, yeah.
Because he was, had been feeding them all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If they didn't eat there, well, they took it with them.
Mm-hmm.
Nancy, these were bachelors that were coming in because Carl was working for the airlines and bringing home food that hadn't been used on that particular flight. Or
this was in the days before the high elevation flight. So there were so many people airsick
that
Pan Am got here. They had most of the food that was for the passengers and nothing but throw it out. And so whoever wanted it, Carl got there early.
And then all these bachelors came over.
They all knew about it.
Well, was there a reciprocity there because you were providing them food? Did they then offer you services that were unasked for, like that they chop your wood or clear your snow?
Well, one or two of them did. Carl Lindstrand always did something. He was ready to, well, he had a tractor and a saw, so we could use him, and he saw that the wood was sawed and in the right lengths and stuff.
And you mean like a sawmill?
Yeah.
It was a buzz saw on wheels, a portable.
Hooked into them. Farm all tractor. So he was always.
It pivoted.
I think so.
And there was a big blade, so big.
That big, yeah.
He saw the brush.
Standard old fashioned.
Well, we used every kind of fuel that you can use when we were first up here. There's some kerosene stoves and wood stove.
Coal.
Yeah, coal.
Yeah, I was thinking about coal, thinking my memory of the coal bunkers, obviously. We never heated with coal here since we came, but I thought, did everybody have a pickup? I mean, how did you get your coal?
Everybody had a pickup.
And so everybody went into town, and
the
coal bunkers was built for pickups, or as opposed to commercially?
Well, there were still a lot of trucks, too, that hauled it around.
The fuel companies hauled coal, and some of them had fancy tip things so they could dump it right into your basement.
Or wherever you wanted it.
So what kind of a stove did you have that you were
every
using
kind.
Multiple?
Well, we started out with his, he had just an old, regular, huge cook stove. And that, within that size house, that would heat the whole thing up and keep it warm. And then I got to where I couldn't, I never did learn to cook on that thing. Beepish did learn, but I never did. I was burning up this and burning up that, or didn't get it done, or didn't get it cooked enough. Then we bought a little electric stove, and that didn't put out any heat at all.
An electric stove for heating?
No,
for cooking.
For cooking.
Oh.
And then we had some kerosene stoves, junger, Rissy was selling. Remember when he used to sell some of those kerosene heaters?
What year was this?
51, 2, 53.
But kerosene was the 50s?
I think so.
And so you went through coal wood stove, then you went through the
wood. We had wood first. And then we went into coal, and I didn't like that at all. Coal was kind of a messy thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I didn't learn too much with wood either. But then when we got that little electric stove, that was my style.
That's when you started baking bread for all these
bachelors and everybody else. 20-something loaves a week. Of course, they weren't great big loaves. They were in small pans. But I wasn't used to any of this kind of cooking.
Did they pay you anything for a loaf of bread?
No. I don't remember ever collecting anything except Lindstrand. Now, he paid back by work, and he was there a lot, so I always kind of liked Carl Lindstrand.
I bet. He would. He wasn't being a total freeloader.
Yeah. But none of the rest of them ever did. And then on top of that, they'd take the gasoline. Carl had his gasoline just sitting in the barrel.
They'd fill up their own vehicles with their gasoline?
I think so. But he never could catch them. He tried, but he knew the gas was going.
So how were these guys supporting themselves?
I don't think one of them had a job. I don't think so. And we had a little cabinet hooked onto the wall on the back outside. And I'd say, Carl, I bought 6 loaves of bread, and there's not a loaf out there. And he said, well, I didn't need it. I don't know where it is, and it never did show up.
So was it word of mouth these guys came? Was this just kind of like, did you know these guys?
I never saw any of them before. Carl had known them all.
When he first started homesteading, right?
Yes.
They all start homesteading about the same
pretty much the same. And he'd bring out so many pounds of nails, he had stopped up there at the igloos and walked down on this rainy season. And the road was impassable. Well, halfway through our road business, we sat down and figured out how much that road cost. $41,000 we'd already spent on it.
On Chena Hot Springs Road?
No, just our road from our driveway up to our house. Because it was right in the swamp, comes off of Chena Hot Springs, right in the lowest part, and he had to cut trees down and lay them out like this.
Corduroy them.
Yeah. And then he said he's put 20 feet of gravel on top of that, and every road had to be paid for. And then since then, we've added another, probably that much more to that road, because he started to had to have that road good enough to do all these buses.
Right, for all the weight of them.
So we've spent an awful lot on a road. We don't have a piece of concrete on it.
I want to take you back to the bachelors there. It's an interesting idea that Carl knew these guys, and they just show up, but supposedly Carl would have met them
at different jobs. Well, now Carl worked for FE Company on the just miniature jobs. Well, not miniature. They made a big deal out of them, but they were just the lowest ranking.
He'd
stand there and hold the hoses and squirt water all over.
So he ran the big hydraulic hoses that washed the bank.
He did that. And something else they do
dredging?
What did he call it? With points.
He's falling around.
Okay, that's what he was doing. So he met them out there.
And then these guys, I mean, these are located at a distance. So where's the houses of these guys if they're showing up at your back door?
Well, I don't know how they even got there. A lot of them walked.
They were all homesteads continuing.
Right, yeah, right.
What are some of the names?
Kruger?
Yeah.
Okay, was just downhill from that new little house that's being built there on the other side of the highway. That was his place.
That was his homestead.
Yeah, that was his homestead. Carl Lindstrand was between us and the highway.
And he had a brother here, too.
And Ever was on the other side of the highway. Who else did you mention? Well, Bob Strait, of course. He was a little farther away.
Yeah, but he had a car, a pickup. He was there a lot, too. And then there were old Funk's road back in there. There were two more guys. And I don't think they even had a homestead back there. They were just
squatting. When did Funk show up on here?
I think they might have been here.
They didn't homestead. Because they're not on that map. They aren't original homesteaders.
Weren't they on that map?
I think they homesteaded over at Bryce's. That was their homestead. Yeah, they did.
Oh, really?
And then Bryce bought it from the Fox.
The Bryce's bought it?
I think they did.
Maranatha was over there.
Yeah, Maranatha Children's Home.
That's where Bryce was bought, and that's who's on this map.
Well, they didn't buy that one. They bought, it was on the right side, and I see, what side would that be? It was north of Maranatha, or whatever.
Oh, those big fields that Henry had up there.
Well, Bert Stemple was in there.
Yeah, he used to
say Lundquist had that property where Funk ended up on this.
So they must have bought from him.
Harry Benton?
Denton.
He's another.
Was Denton one of the guys that would come over?
Come on, but he wasn't very friendly.
He didn't like him. He was paranoid, schizophrenic.
Oh, he was a nut.
The other guys didn't like him either?
Uh-uh.
What did he act like that you saw?
He acted okay to me.
Mm-hmm.
He was kind of a strange guy.
Well, Dad said he used to, like, chase people off with a gun.
Oh, yeah, he'd stand out there with a gun in his hand and threaten you and all that kind of stuff. He didn't want you driving around.
Harry Denton?
Harry Denton.
And he had a gun, too.
But Bob never threatened people with him.
Well, they got afraid of it. They were afraid of it part of the time. Bob Strait could come apart, yeah.
Yeah, Dad said he always had a big revolver on his...
That old Strait did?
Yeah.
Well, Denton did, too.
Well, Dad said Denton was blind, almost blind.
He might have been.
So...
But Denton was farther on out, and he had to pick Denton up of some kind.
Denton was at the creek.
Yeah.
Well, that was way later.
Oh, you mean his original homestead?
Yeah, it was out here closer to him.
Hmm.
There's a lady that has horses out here. He was close to that.
You mean out by Rifle Road? Out by
No, beyond that. Clear on out there.
12 miles. Is this just the side of the Little Chena, maybe?
I think so.
Yeah. Presses were out there later.
Well, that was, they were beyond.
The barbers.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, I thought the press looked...